The first case that we're going to hear today is appeal number 21-1030, American National v. Sleep Number Corporation. Mr. Elliott, are you ready to begin?
May it please the court. I'm Kyle Elliott. This is my colleague Kevin Tuttle appearing on behalf of American National Manufacturing. American National's first concern with the decision below is the moving target of claim construction pertaining to the term substantially fluidly sealed. American National proposed a functional construction which is directed to the basic operation of an air-adjustable mattress. What we got from the board was largely but not wholly sealed, merely giving us two adverbs to replace one adverb. What we are asking you to provide is a meaningful construction that will put everyone on notice of what this phrase means, namely sufficiently sealed to permit the transfer of air from the pump into the air mattress chambers during operation, which is consistent with the claims as a whole and with both embodiments that are disclosed in the 172 patent. Indeed, the public doesn't know what the board construction means until it is actually applied in an invalidity or an infringement analysis by a decision maker. In that application, the board erred again by applying this unclear definition to exclude the Schaefer prior art reference. This is contrary to the intrinsic record and contrary to the 172 patent itself, which indicates at column 3, line 64 through column 4, line 1, that the pump 12 of figure 1, which is a blower type pump as disclosed in the reference Schaefer, is used with a valve enclosure assembly of the 172
Charlie,
patent.
The board applied what it viewed as sort of a reasonable common sense dictionary type meaning, correct?
Yeah, they went to a case, the York case, which I think was an inappropriate extrinsic reference. But yes, I think they were trying to look for some sort of a dictionary
general definition.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I think what's more appropriate here, Your Honor, is to apply either a functional definition out of the intrinsic record or even a structural definition out of the intrinsic record. I think the functional works better because I think a jury understands it better.
Did the patent specification provide that kind of functional definition? I didn't see anything where there was lexicography in the patent specification, for example.
That is absolutely correct. The specification is absolutely almost sparse on what substantially fluidly sealed means. And so that's where we're turning to other places in the intrinsic record and in the specification for other hints as to what this might mean. So again, my point is that in the application of this, that's when you start to find out what this other general dictionary definition really means. And how the board applied that was to exclude the Schaefer reference, which is a blower-based pump. Okay? But in the specification, you see that a blower-based pump at column 3, line 64, which I just referenced, is intended to be used with the valve enclosure assembly of the claimed invention. You can also see this at column 5, lines 18 through 23 of the 172 patent, where it states that the pump is a fan.
Do you agree that Schaefer doesn't teach a seal on its air chamber? Do you agree with that statement?
That's correct. I do agree with that statement. See, the thing to focus on here is that the air chamber of Schaefer and the claimed valve enclosure assembly are materially the same. And what that means is the air inlet where a pump mounts is open. It's unsealed. And then the rest of the box is sealed by either its structure or the other openings are covered by valves. And so each of Versalic is the same way. The air box of Schaefer is the same way where you have an unsealed air inlet. So continuing to think about the intrinsic record, let's consider the claims themselves, as argued on pages 48 and 49 of the blue brief. The valve enclosure is what defines the substantially fluidly sealed air chamber. Okay, it's not the pump, and it's not the other components. Indeed, each of the claims merely recites a pump. It doesn't specify the type of pump, whether it's a blower pump or what we call a linear pump, which would seal it. So that is both the Schaefer air box and the claimed valve enclosure are indeed unsealed at the air inlet and sealed everywhere else, either by the structure of themselves or by valves. Substantially fluidly sealed is a characteristic of the claimed enclosure, not the claimed inflatable mattress system as a whole. So clearly the enclosure itself is unsealed. It has an opening at the air inlet. You can even see that in Claim 2 where it recites the air inlet. The system of the 172 patent would not seal as a whole except in the instance where a linear pump is mounted over the air inlet. Alternatively, if a fan or blower pump is mounted over the air inlet, the system remains unsealed, but the claim valve enclosure itself remains substantially fluidly sealed because it can accomplish its function of directing air into the air chambers of the air mattresses as stated below. Also significant in the intrinsic record is the fact in the prosecution history that examiners twice used the Schaefer air box to reject these claims. Once in the original examination, and then a second time under reexamination, the Schaefer reference was applied.
You talking about the Schaefer 154 patent now?
That's correct.
Now, that's not relied on in your IPR petition, right?
That's correct.
So why can you talk about it now?
So Schaefer PCT, which was relied on in our petition, is basically a continuation in part of the Schaefer 154. The Schaefer PCT adds guides and stops, which weren't addressed by the board because of the finding on substantially fluidly sealed. So Schaefer 154, however...
Did you explain this in your petition? Did you say in your petition that you were relying on not just Schaefer PCT, but, you know, the Schaefer 154, which differs a little bit from it, but from which it depends?
No, we did not say that in our petition, Your Honor.
So how would there be notice?
So this is in part of the intrinsic record. So under the seabed decision, we're allowed to refer to the intrinsic record per your precedent on matters of claim construction. And so what we're doing is pointing out that in the file history, an examiner used the Schaefer 154 patent, which in respects to this air box is the same as Schaefer PCT, to reject that claim of Claim 1 of the 172 application.
So you're relying on this for claim construction, but not in order to for anticipation or obviousness?
That's correct.
Because I thought you were arguing that... That there was some sort of acquiescence from Sleep Number, that a particular element was in the prior art.
Mm-hmm. So we've argued both acquiescence and estoppel based on the what happened in that prosecution history. So what happened?
What does that have to do with? I'm still having a hard time understanding why acquiescence or estoppel would relate to claim construction as opposed to what the prior art teaches.
Because of the general definition that was given to us by the board, like I asserted earlier, we don't know what this construction actually means until we get to the point where you start to apply it. So the two adverbs of largely but not wholly sealed or substantially sealed, it doesn't help you understand what it means. And so what we're doing is we're looking to both the analysis and claim construction and the analysis of how that was applied to see exactly what this means. And so when you look at that prosecution history, you see that the examiners rejected on the basis of Schaefer 154 twice, and both times, this is the acquiescence piece, the patent applicant did not comment on that rejection, and in the first time, they actually amended the claim to make sure this isn't just a plain acquiescence argument. They actually amended the claim to add the guides and stops to gain allowance. And then it was rejected the second time in reexamination over Schaefer 154, and again, without comment from the patentee at that point in time. So trying to make clear...
Did you argue this below?
No, we did not.
Okay, so why can you argue it here?
So as I already stated, we have, pursuant to the court's precedent in seabed, we can raise these intrinsic arguments relevant.
You're saying this is just additional evidence in support of your claim?
Yes, yeah. Okay. So, you know, there's been a lot of waiver discussion throughout the brief. One of the things to keep in mind here is the dichotomy between, or the difference between, issues and arguments. And this is another argument that also was raised by us because we received the board's construction not until the final written decision. And that kind of takes me over to my administrative procedure and due process violations that American National is complaining of. That in addition to being an erroneous claim construction, the panel below arrived at the construction in an unfair, prejudicial manner, violating due process and the APA. American National...
Is this where you're arguing that it wasn't raised until the SIR reply?
Yes, that's part of it.
But weren't you able to address this issue, the claim construction issue, and understand both parties' arguments at oral argument? I seem to recall that the record included ample discussion of this claim construction issue at argument.
true. And what our point also is that even though we get a chance to discuss it at oral argument, we don't have an opportunity to have our experts evaluate it, have their experts evaluate it, cross-examine each other's experts on it. So there isn't the process of vetting a claim construction where you actually have testimony on it. It's just the attorney argument. And I see I've gone into my rebuttal time, so if Your Honors, I'll reserve the rest for rebuttal.
Mr. Cordell?
May it please the Court, good morning. Ruffin Cordell for Sleep Number. It's good to be back in person. So the upshot of this appeal is that from Sleep Number's perspective, we think the Board largely got this correct. And we're not asking really for much of anything here. I know we have a cross appeal, but we think the Board did good work here. Relating to the particular issues raised by my friend Mr. Elliott, the substantially fluidly sealed term was reached, the construction of that term was reached by the Board after 4 pages of analysis where the Board looked specifically at what that plain meaning was, as Judge Schall pointed out, to those of ordinary skill in the art. Mr. Elliott points out that, you know, the construction itself only adds a couple of words and doesn't really change much, but I would be as critical of his construction, sealed sufficiently to deliver compressed air when opening. That would cover an unsealed enclosure. That would cover situations that certainly were nowhere disclosed in this particular patent. But it wasn't just the Board's work there. They cited the specification at 3 different places, columns 2, lines 48 through 50, 64 through 65, and column 4, 30 through 35, for specific examples of the sealed enclosure allowing a very important outcome of this invention, which is that you're able to ascertain the pressure in the mattress at the enclosure. And that has all kinds of advantages that were extolled in detail by our expert, Dr. Messner, at appendix 3036, 3039, and 3048. There's simply no question here that substantially fluidly sealed enclosure plays an important part in this invention. And the Board's construction, largely but not wholly sealed, does give us the kind of explanation that a lay jury would be able to react to.
Do you have any concern with the citation to the York case that your opposing counsel mentioned?
Thank you, Judge Cunningham. Yes, when I read the Board's opinion, or the final written decision, I thought that was merely a confirmation of the construction that they had reached. I didn't see them as reaching into the York case for the fundamental meaning of the term. I think they acknowledge that this court has found that construction to be acceptable and usable to lay jurors. But I didn't see it as a primary touchstone, if you will, of the construction. So I dispute the A&M position that they somehow reached into York and that was the construction. I think it was really more the tail of the dog rather than the dog. With respect to the acquiescence issue, the reality is that there were 2 rejections over the Schaefer 154 references, Judge Schall pointed out, that they're simply using for claim construction. I understand that, acknowledge that. The problem that they face, and I think my brother said this during his remarks, is that the applicant did not comment on that rejection at all. So what we have is we have the examiner making a broad rejection, and he simply listed the elements at appendix 125. You can see that the rejection. He didn't say, oh, Schaefer has this specific structure that is the substantially fluidly sealed enclosure. He just listed them the way when I was a patent examiner, we often did. We list everything that's in the claim. And the applicant said nothing. The applicant added different limitations and the focus shifted. Perhaps it was the easiest path to allowance. There are lots of reasons people do that. But what the law tells us is that you can't view an amendment as an admission unless the applicant makes a comment about the particular subject matter at issue here. Woods and 3M are directly on point. And Woods in particular, I would refer the court to 1287, where it says, in order to view an amendment as an admission, it requires more than the mere presence of a limitation. The applicant has to say something. There has to be some indication, some objective indicia that there was an admission here. So I think that the acquiescence point doesn't really make it.
How would we distinguish between an air enclosure that is sealed versus substantially fluidly sealed?
I do think that is the issue that the board was grappling with, Your Honor. I think that's a valid issue. I think that what the board was attempting to do was to recognize that in order to be substantially fluidly sealed, you had to have something like a pump that it was either sealed or could be sealed, because the pump is a gaping opening in the enclosure. I heard my friend say that, in fact, the prior art doesn't show a sealed enclosure, and in part that's because of the blower pump that they use, and I hate to use that term because I studied this and couldn't find a real definition of a blower pump. But the reality is it's a pump that's open to the atmosphere. And so if it's not actively pushing air, air is escaping. It's a problem. So that unsealed pump is really where the focus of this lies. And that ability to measure the bladder pressure, the mattress pressure at the enclosure, I think is the key. And we did talk about that construction in functional terms below, but we believe what the board did here was correct and will be most helpful to the lay jury, ultimately, should we get that far. And so it's the right construction. So if I could just briefly address...
Does the specification say anything about how to deal with these blower motors? Does it say that you need to have some enclosure? What do you need to do to address that situation?
It's not as explicit as that, but it makes it clear that there are multiple embodiments here. And my friend said, well, you know, they talk about a blower pump. Well, you could use a blower pump if you also make accommodations to have it sealed. One of the figures, figure 4, has 3 valves on it. And the expectation of the third valve, the one that we color, I think, in purple in our brief, is that it acknowledges that the pump is sealed and that the only way to get air out of the system is through this extra valve, this extra structure that is provided. So it doesn't in text tell us exactly how to handle it, but it tells us that the pump must be sealed, that you wouldn't have that extraneous valve in the system but for the presence of a sealed pump. And that's what the claims talk about. So there are other embodiments that could have been claimed. It just wasn't the case here. If I can briefly address the APA issue, I do believe that there was ample discussion during the proceeding over the construction. And the board is free to reach its own construction, as often happens, both before the PTAB and the district courts. Oftentimes, the party's suggestions are not what carries the day, even in this court, try as I might. But the reality is they reached a different construction. No one can complain about that because it's being done as a matter of law. The board is doing the best they can.
And in this there's case, precedent to support that position, right?
Plenty, plenty. I mean, the reality is that essentially every case that we face, often you can imagine at least one of the constructions is something that the board finds on its own, perhaps in between the positions of the parties, if nothing else. There's no APA issue here. So unless there are other questions, I think I've covered my issues.
Do you want to discuss your cross-appeal issues at all? Do you really think that we can reach the construction of the pressure monitoring means, given that it's seeking an advisory opinion?
I don't, Your Honor. And I, as I was going through the briefing, I saw in the yellow brief perhaps an agreement from our opponents that, in fact, under Skyhawk, it was not appropriate to change that construction. So we started that process somewhat apprehensive because of sort of the positions they had taken, and they suggested that perhaps we would be bound with that construction for all time. But because it would not alter the board's decision, ultimately the judgment, if we can call it that, of the board, it's not appropriate for us to do anything with it. And we're free to argue whatever positions we can in proceedings going forward. And I think we've come to an agreement about that. So I think that one is one that we don't have to deal with.
Do you want to raise anything with respect to Vrzalek? I think that's how you say it.
I've had so much trouble with that, Your Honor. Vrzalek. The thing that struck me about Vrzalek, and I understand that I'm going into the teeth of a substantial evidence standard here, but the thing that struck me about Vrzalek is that the entirety of that disclosure is born on a hospital bed that requires continuous airflow. So it only functions when the blower is moving air from the outside through the device and out. It doesn't inflate the mattress. It literally is providing air so that the porous membrane in the mattress can support the patient's skin. And so it is an example of taking a disclosure and turning it on its head. And what the board said is, look, it's capable of being sealed. And I understand that, but we need to confront the prior art for what it does and what it says. And in this case, the Brzalek disclosure, it really is taking it, you know, from fish to fowl. It is no longer within the four corners of that reference. So that's really the gravamen of our appeal.
What about the express disclosure about the air box being airtight?
That was an unfortunate statement. You know, I acknowledge that. They put it right up front in column 8. But then they don't really explain it. And there is some explanation of seals that are used here and there throughout Brzalek. But what we know from the remainder of the disclosure is that blower pump in Brzalek is active and it is moving. And their expert admitted that you cannot close the valves that might be used to somehow seal the pump. You cannot close the valves and have Brzalek operate. So he made that admission at Appendix 499.
Given the standard of review, which is substantial evidence, what do we do in a situation where like that, where the reference expressly says something, but there's some logic to suggest that what the reference says is untrue, but the board relies on what the reference expressly says? It makes it a little difficult.
I acknowledge the difficulty. There's no two ways about that. However, we have to take the reference for what it actually tells us and what it teaches to one of ordinary skill, and that single passing reference in column 8, before there's really any discussion of the enclosure, I would posit is insufficient. Given the overall disclosure and the fact that substantially fluidly sealed, has to have some meaning. It has to actually carry some weight. And the airtight box, a plastic panel is airtight, but it will not function in the context of this invention.
What record citation do you have for your position that your expert said the valves can't be sealed?
It was actually their expert,
Ron. Sorry.
And it's at Appendix 4099, which is at page 269, 1 through 14. That was his deposition. And the quote I have written down here is, can't actually close the valves in Brzalek because the bladders would all deflate, right?
Oh.
I have to keep the valves open in some form. That was the exact colloquy that was exchanged. And I think he recognized that one of ordinary skill reading Brzalek would realize this can't be substantially fluidly sealed, because if it did, it wouldn't function.
And do you have any case law support for the basic contradiction that Judge Stoll just outlined in terms of what the reference says versus this other testimony you're pointing to?
Yeah, not at my fingertips, Your Honor, but it's certainly been a part of our practice forever that we read prior art for what it tells us. And I understand I'm in a anticipation context, and so in that context, We are a little more strict about the letter of the reference. But again, overall, Brzalek doesn't lead us to these patent claims. And the suggestion that one of ordinary skill would even read it to see the anticipation that the board found is difficult.
Any further questions?
No.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Elliott, you have nearly your 5 minutes left.
Thank you, Your Honor. Let me start first with the Brzalek reference. Sleep Number likes to refer to Brzalek as a leaky system, but leaky, the term not used in Brzalek, is a complete misnomer. Brzalek successfully directs compressed air where it's supposed to go, into the air chamber of the air mattresses, and that air is directed through the same pathway as the 172 patent. It comes from the pump, into the airtight air box, through the valves, and into the air mattress. The difference in Brzalek is, of course, that it's a low air loss mattress, which is also true of one of the accused products underneath, the P5000 of American National. The difference is it's a low air loss mattress, that the surface of the mattress is air permeable, allowing air to intentionally escape, not leak out of the mattress to carry moisture away from the patient. Sleep Number improperly focuses on the alleged leakiness of the air inflatable mattress system as a whole, instead of the airtight characteristic of the air box. Air is not unintentionally leaking out of this. It's going in the same pathway. And if you put a linear pump over the air inlet, you would have a sealed system. You're not going to do that here because of the low air loss from an engineering standpoint, but you would have the same system. And that goes back to my earlier point regarding substantially fluidly sealed, where what's supposed to provide the substantially fluidly sealed air chamber is the enclosure. The pump isn't what provides that. And you've got to keep in mind the actual claim language, the pump, isn't specified as the type, whether it's a sealed pump or an unsealed pump.
What about that admission at page A4099 of your own expert? How do you respond to that?
Yeah, so if you read that, the expert doesn't actually say that it cannot be sealed. And actually, if you look at the device, it has...
I'm actually looking at that page.
Yeah.
So do you want to tell me specifically what it is that he says?
So I don't have that quote in front of me, Your Honor.
Uh-huh.
But I don't believe he says it cannot be sealed. He's talking about the operation of it for the low air loss feature. You would not seal it. Those valves can be sealed, and that bed actually has what is called a toileting function in which you would seal those valves for that. Now, admittedly, that deflates the cells, right? So, but the key point about Rizalik in regard to the 102 rejection is that it does have an airtight air box similar to structure and even in material respects the same as the valve enclosure of the 172 patent. That specifically being it has an air inlet that is unsealed, and then it has...
I think the quote is, well, you can't actually close those valves in Vrazic because then the bladders would all deflate, right? And then the answer is that's correct. Because they're all open in the atmosphere, that's right. So you have to keep the valves open in some form in Vrazic. I'm probably not saying that correctly.
Vrazic, it's okay. We struggle with it a lot, too.
That's right. But anyway, I want to make sure you're addressing that quote.
Mm-hmm.
And so why does that not tell me that it's not airtight? That the controller is not airtight.
Well, it's not open to atmosphere. We talk about the blower pumps being open to atmosphere, but as my esteemed opposing counsel said, that when that blower's on, air is not coming out. And that blower in Vrazic runs the entire time in order to maintain the low air loss. And so operationally, it's correct that those valves are not closing off. But again, you still have an airtight air box,
The actual language, though, here says because they're all open to the atmosphere. So what were you saying about atmosphere? I want to make sure.
So where the open, where do the open to atmosphere comes in is if the fan or the blower shuts off, and then air can back out of the system, and it backs out of the system into atmosphere. And so that's what you're looking at about the open to atmosphere. But the fan blower in Vrazic runs constantly to maintain the low air loss. So air isn't escaping out of that system other than as intended, and that's through the air permeable membrane of the mattress surface. If I may, looking back at substantially fluidly sealed, this is one of those things where substantially, if something's sealed, it's sealed. If something's substantially sealed, there is indeed some unsealed element to that. And for here, that's the air inlet of Schaefer, it's the air inlet of the valve enclosure, and it's the air inlet of Rizalik. And so if they wanted to cover something that was fully sealed, like they discussed in the red brief, they should have omitted the word substantially. Being a patent prosecutor, substantially has its place in use. If I want to say something is substantially mounted on a center line, then I've added some breadth to my claim by noting that it can kind of slide one way or the other. Here, this particular issue seems to me to be one of my wife and I, if we're either pregnant or we're not. It's either sealed or substantially sealed. And if it's only substantially sealed, there is some unsealed element to that.
You're out of time. Do you have anything you want to add?
No, I'm good, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Elliott. Mr. Cordell, you have a little over 2 minutes left if you'd like to take any of your rebuttal time on the cross.
Only to add that my partner, Mr. Courtney, has ably found the Wasika case, which stands for the proposition that even in an anticipation context, and that's 853 F3rd 1272, that the ambiguity in the reference has to be taken into account. We can't simply take the one-off statement, for example, in column 8 of an airtight box. We have to read the reference in its entirety. Thank you.
Thank you. Case is submitted.